is hard to find.
All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. It's our third last show, and so we're trying to deliver the best quality product near the end. Finishing strong. That's what we'd like to try to do. Neil Donald Walsh is the best-selling author of Conversations with God. Of course, you know him from that. But also, a little new book. It's not
about
little.
Jack and Diane.
Yeah. He's the author of The Essential Path, Making the Daring Decision to Be Who You Truly Are. Our modern era is plagued by increasing alienation. We are seeing an us-against-them world everywhere we turn. It just seems like it. You know, we find ourselves divided from each other as never before across political, economic, social, and spiritual lines. And as humanity is being torn apart right before our eyes, separating many of us from our friends and even our loved ones, from our hopes and dreams, from the natural world, and from so much that gives meaning and value to our lives, people are blaming everyone and everything around them for the collective problems that we have created ourselves. We are turning against each other rather than to each other, just when we need each other the most. Best-selling author of Conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh, offers a radical solution to the growing problem of humanity's alienation. He invites us to question our basic assumptions about ourselves, about each other, about life and how it works, and about God, and to rethink the very definition of humanity. The Essential Path challenges every human to make a daring decision, to look at who we are and how we can choose to be in a planet-altering new way. With insight and spiritual perceptivity, Mr. Walsh peers into the heart of a broken, divided society, prompting us to ask the critical questions that have the power to transform our world. The website is Neil Donald Walsh. Neil has an E at the end of it, neildonaldwalsh.com. He was with us a few months ago. It was an honor then. It's an honor now. Good to have you back again. Mr. Walsh, how are you today?
You know, I'm wonderful. Thank you for that introduction.
Well, let me ask you to start off, Neil. How would it break your heart if this book was to be misinterpreted? For someone to not at all get what you're trying to say would mean that someone would respond to your book in what way?
Well, I don't think in those terms, Drew, and it wouldn't break my heart at all, because I have no requirement, either internally, that is, you know, how I feel about life and myself and the whole game is not determined by how other people react to what I'm offering or what I'm suggesting. So I wouldn't be disappointed in the sense that I would lose my ability to live a happy, joyful, fulfilling life. So I think, you know, what I try to place before people are simple suggestions, ideas. They either resonate with them, that is, people who read them, or they don't. And it's really okay with me either way. What I do aim to do is start the discussion. And I think that it could be fairly said that I've done that. Millions of people have read the Conversations with God books. And I suspect even now, the Essential Path was number one in the spirituality section of Amazon just a few days ago. So apparently a lot of people are taking a look at it and making their own decision, which is what the whole point of the Conversations with God cosmology is. Not that this is the answer, but to take a look at what the answer might be, and for each of us to come to our own decision around that.
I read something the other day, an article, I think, and it said something like, spirituality is not about you. What do you think of that sentence?
I agree in the broadest sense. In fact, Conversations with God made that statement to me in the dialogue. I was asking, you know, what does it take to make life work? And God said, well, you have to understand that your life is not really about you. It's about in the small sense, the individual you. Hmm. It's about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. So true spirituality, I think, in my opinion and in my experience, it's about turning the focus of our lives away from us, turning that lazy Susan around and having us look outward from where we are to see in what way can I touch the world the lives of those people with whom I'm connected that would make their lives better. Now, the irony of that is that when we live that way, our lives also become better. So in that sense, in that extended idea, life does turn out to be about us, but it doesn't start over here. It starts over there.
Okay, there's no question that the things you write about, the suggestions that you make for us as humanity, man, if we leaned into them, it would seem that things would be better. But we don't. And the reason we don't is because we don't care, we don't have time, we can't maintain interest that long, we're too busy putting food on the table, just doing life. Like, what is the reason that we just don't do what you suggest we do?
Well, all of those reasons you just gave are bunched together under an umbrella that I call fear. That is, we're afraid we won't have enough time. We're afraid we don't have the resources. We're afraid that if we pay too much attention to the problems that are outside of us, that we're going to lose out in the end anyway. We're afraid we can't even make an impact. We're afraid there's nothing that we can do, even if we tried. So fear lies at the bottom of most of the reasons. And the reason that we fear so much, that we can't make any difference anyway, and even if we do, we're going to lose out, the reason that we have, that we live in fear, most people live in fear at some level or another, is because of our relative youth as a species. That is, the human race is a very young species relative to the age of the universe, just the age of the Earth itself, for that matter. If you put the age of the Earth on a scale of 1 year, the entire of human history could be put into the last 60 seconds of that year. That's how young we are relative to the age of the Earth. Forget about the age of the cosmos. So we're a very young species, and we're just now really maturing a little bit, growing out of our infancy at least, and moving into our adolescence, and beginning to grasp some of the larger truths about life. And so I think that's why we behave the way we behave, Drew. But there is hope now, because the number of cultural creatives, that is, people who understand what I'm saying, is growing exponentially, not in a 1, 2, 3, 4 rate, but at a 2, 4, 8, 16, 32 rate. And that exponential growth is beginning to show itself as we change our ideas about who we are and why we're here.
I was just about to ask you, you know, what are you noticing? What are you seeing that is actually different? Changes, the bell curve.
Drew, I mean, even 10 years ago, perhaps even 5 years ago, something as simple as a same-sex marriage would be totally unacceptable among the largest percentage of people in North America, and for that matter, in the world. And that has changed dramatically. Equal pay for women over the past 25 years has made, we're still not there, but has made extraordinary advances. I could bring up a whole list of social, economic, political, and spiritual changes that have occurred in the past 15 or 20 years, not the least of which, by the way, is that a book titled Conversations with God would not even have been published 25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Wow. When was the last time someone said to you, Neil, well, maybe they didn't say it to you directly, because especially Canadians, we're not usually that up in people's grill, but maybe you came across an American who said to you, Neil, come on, buddy, really? You think you talked with God? When was the last, like, does that happen regularly or irregularly?
You know, I have had people say those kinds of things to me, and my first reaction is, you know what, I totally get how you could be skeptical about that and even make fun of it. I totally get it. We don't make fun of the fact that some other people have claimed to have talked directly to God, but they have to be long gone and dead. So if we talk about Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon Church, or if we talk about any one of a number of messengers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, whoever we want to bring up, it's their words are authoritative, and they've even written books around all of those words. But we accept them because they're no longer with us. That is, they're no longer in the body. They died hundreds, if not a couple of thousand years ago. So we have a bias against people who walk around today in contemporary life and say, yeah, I'm having a conversation with God. But the point of the CWG dialogue, and the point that's made over and over again in those books, is that everyone is having this experience. We're simply calling it something else, and we have to call it something else because of the bias that we have against it. So rather than calling it a conversation with God, rather than saying, yeah, I communicate with God all the time. You know, by the way, Lily Tomlin, a wonderful comedian, made a very clear point around this. She said, when I tell people that I talk to God every day, they say, oh, that's wonderful, what a devout person. You pray every day to God? And they call me devout. When I tell people that God talks to me every day, they call me crazy. So apparently it's okay to talk to God, but not to say that God talks back to us. Yeah. So we call God's conversations with us by other names: inspiration, a moment of insight, an epiphany, a sudden awareness, mm-hmm. you know, a magical idea that just came to us in the shower stall. We'll call it whatever we can call it, rather than say that the source of creativity, the source of wisdom, the source of understanding, which in my world is God, actually came to us directly and came through us directly. But in fact, all of us are having conversations with God all the time. We're simply calling it something else.
Neil Donald Walsh, that's who we're chatting with. New book from him, The Essential Path, Making the Daring Decision to Become Who and What You Are. Beside me in the studio is Ashley David Chapman. He is the vice president of Canada's largest, most infamous ice cream company. He's the ice cream man cometh, and he's here in the studio.
I prefer Dark Prince of ice cream.
Dark Prince of ice cream.
Whatever you want to call me, that's fine.
Neil, you know, for a big corporate, I'm going to make you sound feel very awkward right now, Ashley.
I appreciate that.
For a big corporate, you know, dude like Ashley David Chapman of Chapman's Ice Cream, you know, mm-hmm. he's successful. They're doing it. He's really kind of doing it. Do you work in the corporate world? Do you work with corporate bigwigs? What would you say to someone like Ashley David Chapman, who really, he's got it all?
Well, I wouldn't say anything to him. I don't proselytize. I don't try to convince anyone of anything. The question is not what I would say to David. The question is, what would David say to me? That is, if he had called me or contacted me and asked me questions, if he said, hey, can you come in and talk to our employees, which I've been invited to do, by the way, more than once with corporations his size, but it's almost always done privately. So if David called me and said to me, you know what, you've got some interesting ideas, I'd love to know more about that. I read your book, The Essential Path. It's an interesting thought. Would you come and talk to our employees? I'd be there in a minute. But and of course, it would charge him a fee.
Yeah, just to be clear about that. Yes. But what like how does the Essential Path? How do you foresee that impacting, for example, a large company if their employees, let's say for whatever reason, all the employees get the book, they read it. How do you envision a company changing as a result of reading the Essential Path?
I can't imagine that if the employees agreed with what they saw in the book, of course, they would have that. Your question presumes agreement. But if they agreed with what they saw in the book, the whole culture, the whole corporate culture, would shift. Not that the culture is not okay the way it is right now, but no matter how good it is, no matter how wonderful it is to work for Chapman or for any wonderful corporation that's doing well, it can be made even better because and its employee relations, its relations with all of its customers, and its relations with the world at large, that is a role that Chapman plays on the stage of world events. A corporation doing that well has a voice that it can use on the stage of world events. I suspect that the entire corporate culture would change, as well as what would change would be in the homes of the individual employees of that corporation. We would begin to see each other as part of us in a way that we are not just in that corporation, but anywhere in the world, in a way that we're not probably not doing right now. We would begin to ask very important questions. For instance, just to give you one example, I'm sure there are disagreements even in David's corporation. Once in a while, probably once every 3 or 4 years, somebody disagrees with somebody else inside of the corporate structure of that organization. And there may even be, God forbid, arguments or at least animated discussions among the executives of that corporation. What should our next move be? How should our next advertising campaign be rolled out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when that happens, if one person looks at the other person and begins to use the principles that are contained in my book, he would say to himself, what does this have to do? This disagreement we're now having, it's a fairly vivid disagreement. We're not just casually talking about this. We're having something just beneath an argument about this. What does this have to do with the agenda of my soul? How can I recontextualize what's happening right now within the larger context of my new understanding about who I am and why I'm here on the earth?
Well, just a point of reference, I work with my parents every day, so the argument thing, we've got that down.
Yeah, that's really right.
Yeah,
that's right.
But we're a family company, so we fight it out.
Well, I'm interested in, Neil, you know I thoroughly love what you write. It is devourable, you know? It is chewable. I can chew on your stuff for a very long time. But ultimately, what I want to know is, how does this impact the average person in an average day? Because we can all get the mountaintop experience after reading your book. Oh, I feel good, I'm motivated, etc. But I want to know what lasts. I want to know what transforms a human being.
Into action.
Like, I just had a guy on the show. His name is Bruxy Cavey. He's a pastor. He wrote a book called The End of Religion. Very good guy. And when I told people online that he was coming on the show, some of those trolls came out and started slagging him. And my thought was, when I grow up, I want to be more like the person who says nice things about his enemies than the enemies are saying about him. So transformative stuff. So how is this really going to impact me? And I'm trying to paint this in a way, like I'm trying to envision the person, Neil, the one individual, the dude, you know, the hockey player. I always pick on them because they're meatheads. The hockey player who reads The Essential Path. And then what do I see differently about him? Are they more kumbaya? Are they peaceful? Are they lovey-dovey? Is it a walking Hallmark movie? Like, how do you see that hockey player changing? It's a bizarre question, I know, but I just need help grounding in this one.
Question. It's not a bizarre question. It's a very legitimate question and a good one. But your question does presume that the hockey player agrees with what he's reading. If he doesn't agree with it, what he does is throws it in the trash can and says, what a bunch of hooey, and he doesn't pay attention to it at all. So the question presumes that he agrees with what he's read.
Right, let's say that.
If he agrees with what he's read, I think that the ultimate result, the outcome that you'd see, is a person who's much happier with himself. That I'm not even going to use all the, you know, New Age jargon words. He's more peaceful. He's more serene. He's more centered. He's more this or that. Who knows about you? And, of course, there's no one-size-fits-all answer to your question. But the average person, if they were to step into the living of their life in the way that the book suggests, would no doubt feel better about themselves. They would have a higher level of self-esteem. I'm used the word self-love. They would just enjoy being themselves much more. And, you know, I'm a better person today than I was 25 years ago. There's just no doubt about that. I'm kinder. I'm more gentle. I do disagree with people, even my parents when they were still with us, in a way which is much different than I might have in the earlier days. I'm a totally different kind of person. I'm nicer to be around. And I like it. So that starts a snowball rolling downhill, and it turns out that in the end, people start to be nicer toward me. They say, and you know, I've had people who've known me for a long time. I call those my BBs, before book. I've got people who fall into the BB category. They've known me before book. They've known me for 35, 40, 50 years. And those people say to me routinely, I'm not bragging about it, but you asked the question, they say to me routinely, wow, you've really changed. I mean, you're just not the person you used to be. You're not so verbally attacking. You're not so sarcastic. You're not so defensive. You're just a nicer person to be around. Yeah. And by golly, that's, you know, I love that about you. Give me the book. You know, let me read, how did you get there? So I think that my answer to your question is the result you would see is the hockey player would like himself a whole lot more. He may not be swinging that hockey stick at his opponents quite as viciously as he did before.
You know, I find it interesting that in this day and age, says, remember the old Bill Cosby Jell-O commercial where he sounded like, hey, you kids, get out of that Jell-O tree. He was always kind of doing that thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, maybe not a great reference these days.
No, not anymore.
The Bill Cosby?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I don't think these days we have a problem with getting the under 30s to like themselves. They seem to like themselves aplenty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's missing?
I think there's a difference between approving of yourself and liking yourself. I think that the young people today approve of themselves. They you know, like a lot of young people, not just these days, but when I was in my 30s and 20s, they think they have the answers. They think they know what's true and what's right and what has to happen and all the rest. So they feel self-justified and self-approving. But I'm not necessarily sure that they like themselves any more than we liked ourselves when we were behaving in certain ways that we behave in. Mm-hmm. But I think that the issue is more than, and that we're talking such generalities, you know, liking yourself, just really being pleased with the way you move through the world, the way you are, and the reasons that you do, and and pleased with the things that you do, not just liking yourself because you know you think you're handsome or good looking or you're a nice person or you've got a good sense of humor or you know, as you say, young people don't have a problem liking themselves, but when you say to a person, tell me 10 things you did in the past week that made someone else's life better. No, forget 10 things. Give me 5.
Mm-hmm.
And if that person can rattle off 10 things that they did that demonstrably made another person's life better, and that brought to another person, that gave that person back to themselves. And by the way, these don't have to be big things, like when David announces to his entire company that everyone's getting a 3% raise beginning in July. We're not talking about that. I'm sure he pays his people very well. But we're talking about, I'm sure he does, or he wouldn't be successful. But we're talking about just walking down the hallway at his place of business and stopping the doorman or the janitor or anyone who works for the company, sharing a smile and saying, hey, Jim, how's it going? How are the kids? Tell me everything I want to know. And by the way, I want you to know how valuable you are to this company. And I appreciate everything that you are offering here. And there is a way up to get even higher in this company. There's a ladder here, and I want you to climb it with me. Take my hand, and I'll take you there. If you ever need anything, give me a call. Here's my extension. Now, if he interacts with people in that way, and I suspect he does, by the way. I'm not suggesting for a minute.
I do, actually.
Yeah, Ashley gave me a tour of the factory, and when we toured, he would check in with someone there. And I just thought he was doing it to show off, but you actually cared.
I know almost everybody's name. I pride myself on that. And just yesterday, I congratulated one of my employees who was elevated to a lead hand position. And I've known that kid since he was 5 years old.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And I'm the only one here speaking from the 30s range, so not all of us people in our 30s are dirtbags, let me tell you. And it's just that I just get very leery about the whole talking to God aspect of things, because you hear that crazy pastor in the States who justified his private jet because God told him demons were on commercial airlines and he didn't want to get tainted. So
I think he meant flight attendants.
probably. It's a weird concept.
And David should be skeptical. I would encourage and invite the deepest level of skepticism. I need no one to believe that we're having direct communications with the divine. But I do pose to all my audiences. I'm off to Paris tomorrow. Actually, I have to get on a plane tomorrow morning, and there are 2,000 people waiting to hear me. I'm told the sponsor of a program said we've gone over the 2,000 mark in people who are going to listen to you next week in the lecture I'm giving in Paris. I'm going to say to those people, hey, listen, I don't hope that you believe that I talk to God. But do you believe there is such a thing as God by whatever definition you choose to use? And if you think there is an energetic in the universe that we call God, Yahweh, Brahman, Jehovah, whatever, some source of creativity in the universe that has something to do with how the whole cosmos operates, if you believe in that source, do you think that that source would have enough power to communicate directly with us, to inspire us, to awaken us, to assist us, to help us? Do you think it's possible that if we do pray to that source, that it's possible for that source to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to give you this. Tomorrow morning when you're taking a shower, listen very carefully, because you're going to get an idea, and you're going to swear it came from somewhere else, but I promise you it came from me.
Well, man, I'm really happy that we were able to talk to you one more time before the end of the Drew Marshall Show, Neil. Thank you. Thank you very much for gracing us with your presence twice in the last few months.
That's why your show is going, because, you see.
I'm going to blame it on you, man. I'm going to blame it all on you. Yeah. Neil, I hope you have a great time in Paris.
Thank you. I hope so. They really need some inspiration. The Notre Dame thing really tore the city apart, and it did more than just hurt them at a physical level. The psychic injury that they've suffered there, you know, it's just terrible, and I'm going there at just the right time.
Oh, good. Neil Donald Walsh on the Drew Marshall Show. NeilDonaldWalsh.com. There's an E at the end of Neil. Neil Donald Walsh. You know him as the best-selling author of Conversations with God. And we're talking about his new release, The Essential Path, Making the Daring Decision to Be Who You Truly Are. Thank you, Neil. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Drew. Lovely to be here with you. David, good luck with your continued success.
Nice to meet you, Donald.
Yeah. Take care. Donald, you're a funny guy. Take care. Bye-bye. Neil Donald Walsh and Ashley David Chapman. You're a funny guy.
I try.